Hello, I'm Adam, and welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench, a gardening podcast where you'll hear tales and stories from the most interesting and different people from the world of both indoor and outdoor gardening. This season is sponsored by the wonderful people at Plant Grow, producers of award-winning organic fertilisers made with zero chemicals. Great for your garden, and even greater for the planet. And don't forget, if you use the code POTTINGBENCH at the checkout, you'll receive 10% off all products at plantgrow.co.uk. This week's episode is for those of us that really cannot find the time to get everything done in the garden, as I talk to the author of The 5-Minute Garden, Letitia McClough. Letitia's latest book aims to cut down those sometimes daunting tasks into 5-minute jobs here and there, something that I know we could all do with help with at the moment. Keep listening to hear more. For anyone who is not familiar with your body of work and what you do, who are you and what do you do?
Who am I? What do I do? I'm Letitia McClough, and I am a mother and a wife, and I am a very enthusiastic gardener, and I've written a couple of books, and that's really about it.
You've written three, haven't you? Is that right?
I have written three, yes. I'm sort of struggling into the idea of a fourth, but I just can't quite get myself into it. I'm terribly slow, and I can go into the slump of demotivation. I'm in one of those at the moment. Don't worry, get out of it.
I sympathise writing wise. I think you have to kind of be in the zone, really, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. So you've written three books. Do you want to tell us what they are and what they do?
My first book was called The Virgin Gardener, and I wrote it when I was fresh out of kind of gardening school. Basically my story is that I was sort of swanning around rather directionless for quite a while in my 20s, and everyone else seemed to sort of know what they wanted to do and know who they were, and I kind of didn't. I was just going to parties and sort of feeling a bit sorry for myself. And then I went to gardening school, and this whole world opened up to me, and it was just terribly exciting, and I absolutely loved it. And I lived in a flat at the time, and I had a little balcony, and it was very kind of them at the English Gardening School to let me come, because the rest of the cohort there, they all had big gardens and probably gardeners as well. amazing, wonderful group of people, mostly women, and it was just amazing to learn with them. And so, you know, I only had a few windowsills and a little tiny backyard, which was sort of the entrance to my sort of upper maisonette flat, and a balcony. And I started trying to replicate the kind of amazing gardens that we've been visiting and the things we've been learning about on my dining room table and on my windowsills and on my balcony. Unbelievably, someone came over for dinner and said, oh, I've got a friend who works at a publishing house who's looking for a lady gardener to write a book.
I love that term, lady gardener.
Lady gardener. And I said, oh, I don't know if I could write a book, but I mean, I said that in my head, but obviously to him, I said, well, of course I can write a book. Of course I can. not knowing whether I could write one. And it's one of those amazing moments of bravery in one's life that you don't regret, because, you know, I'm not usually that brave. Usual me would probably say, oh, I couldn't possibly do that. Go away. Mm. But for some reason I said, well, of course I can. And when this lady called up, she said, do you think you could do that? I said, of course I can. And then I actually had to write it. And it turned out that, yes, I could, which was very nice. And so I wrote that, and that came out. And then pretty soon after that, I got married and had a baby, and I had to move house. And I moved house into this house with this enormous garden compared to what I'd had, but absolutely enormous and quite large in London terms. Sure. And she said to me, do you think you could write another book about this one? And I said, yes, of course. And so the first book, The Virgin Gardener, is all about how to garden with very little time and in very little space, and about how to garden when you don't know anything at all. And it was really the book that I wish that I'd had when I first went to gardening school, you know, because I was too scared to put up my hand and say, well, what actually is a perennial? You know, I was really, you know, all those things that you think you're silly for not knowing. I mean, I didn't really know what deciduous meant. I was that sort of, and I don't think that's odd, by the way. I don't
No,
think necessarily
I think you're right.
Do we?
No, I think there's a presumption, isn't there? I think sometimes that the just even those two, just perennial and deciduous, they're kind of thrown about just as kind of par for the course. And I think there is an assumption that everybody does just know everything, and of course they don't. It's as though us as garden enthusiasts can kind of say, oh yes, we know what that is. But if you were to suddenly be thrown into any other kind of pursuit or kind of area of life, I don't know, knitting. I don't know why I chose that. But I don't know anything about knitting, but I know there are things called a slip stitch. I couldn't tell you what it is, but it's that same kind of thing, isn't it? It's kind of breaking down the terms and the myths and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I don't, by the way, I don't think that there's anything kind of sort of elitist about it. I have not to think. I don't think there is. I think it's just that when you become very interested in something, you do learn things about it very quickly. You soak it up like a sponge, and it's as if you've always known it. And certainly things like, you know, when you're really interested in gardening, you will just soak up a Latin name and you'll just know it. And you forgot that there was a time that you didn't know it. And I think that is the thing with gardeners. They don't necessarily remember a time when they didn't know what perennial meant. And they're not trying to keep it from you. They're just sort of, you know, they're just gone. So I wrote that book to sort of bridge that gap or try to. And then the second book was about creating a garden from scratch, from nothing. I was basically the garden that I had was used as a sort of scrubby football field by kids, and it had a few trees and that was it. Otherwise it was just grass. And so I set myself a challenge, which was to create a garden in a year.
That's right. That was cool. That was Sweet Peas for Summer.
That's right. Yeah. And it was the most amazing experience because I had a 9-month-old child, and I got my father to come and help me dig the beds. And it's such a lovely memory, actually, because like he's elderly now and he wouldn't necessarily be able to do that now. You know, we made memories making that garden. I chucked everything in it, you know. It wasn't designed. And that's what I loved about it. Because it wasn't sort of, I tried to keep it to a sort of palette of plants, but I failed miserably. And it was a riot of colour. And I really did prove to myself that I could do it. You really can. You can just put in something and it looks like nothing. And then it will. All you need to do is make sure it's got some water and favorable conditions, and then it will just go for it. And
what point in the year did you start that garden? Was it at the start of the year?
Yes, at the start of the year. Yeah.
Right. When you start a garden, I think about our garden sometimes as to when you either move in or you start a garden will determine in a way not how successful your garden is, but to say you started a garden in autumn, what you would then experience at the very start of your kind of gardening journey would be quite, I won't say barren, but if you're starting it from the start in autumn, you do a lot in terms of bulbs, etc. But there's not a tremendous amount to look at in autumn and winter, not in a brand new garden. But if you were to start a garden in, I don't know, say summer or late summer, where you could be planting perennials and you've got instant colour. I just think that's quite interesting. When you start a garden, will depend on how
and the experience
you perceive
that
it.
Then provides. Yes, absolutely. I mean, we've moved in here in February, and I started. I really went for it in early February, March. But of course, I didn't have any bulbs. I didn't have any tulips, and I didn't have any daffodils, and I didn't have any fritillaries or anything like that because I hadn't been there the previous autumn. And that was, so it was a very different garden to how it would have been if I'd got there a bit earlier. Yeah. And of course, a garden is never finished, as you know, and you just add and add and add to it. And I loved that garden. And then I do keep changing. I'm a bit fickle when it comes to gardens. I keep changing my mind about how I want them. And so it's gone through several incarnations, and it's about to go into another one because we're building. I think also gardens have to move with you and what you're doing in your life. I mean, I know Daisy said this on her podcast with you, that, you know, that really the garden initially was just for her children.
Yeah.
and she couldn't do very much with it. I think that's what she said.
I think she said that she, I might be paraphrasing slightly, I think she said that she kind of, in a similar way, she kind of just threw things into it that she liked, but essentially it was a space for the kids. It was kind of a lawn for the kids, really. And the dog as well, I think she
the dog. I think, you know, with all these Chelsea gardens, I think people, there is a disconnect there. And although I love a Chelsea garden, I'm the first person to adore a Chelsea garden. You know, you have to understand that they're not real. They're not real gardens. And, you know, if you've ever seen a Chelsea garden being built, I don't know if you've ever actually been involved in the build-up of a Chelsea garden in the planting phase, you will see that it is, you know, it's loads and loads of pots under mulch.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I think you can see that from the breakdown as well, especially on the kind of the last day of Chelsea or the last day of any show, where you see it being broken down. It almost breaks the myth of the mystique of the whole thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a stage set. That's what it is. And it's not real. It's a wonderful, wonderful way to get inspired, but it's in no way real.
Not a reality of a garden, is it?
And I think, sorry, what I was going to say is that you have to garden for, I think you have to, if you, people get very wound up about how their gardens should look. And I don't know, I think it's much more important to think about how you want your garden to feel.
Yeah.
How do you want to feel when you walk into your garden? Yeah. How do you want it to make you feel? And what do you want to do in it? What do you want it to do for you? I think in a way, how it looks is kind of secondary to that. Or that's what I've discovered over the years.
I definitely sympathise.
Yeah,
I definitely agree. So the title of the book, Sweet Peas for Summer, was that kind of idea that you were starting at the start of the year, so you were presumably sowing your sweet peas then and hoping to bloom.
Yeah, hoping. And of course they weren't very good because, you know, they were great. But obviously I would have preferred to have sown them in autumn. And I do prefer to sow. I mean, obviously, guys, no harm in sowing your sweet peas in the spring. It's great. But it is better. It's a job off your list to do it in the autumn. You get better, stronger, earlier, stockier, beefier, more delicious plants.
Yeah. If in doubt, do both.
If in doubt, do both. Yeah. Have fun with it. Or buy them.
Buy them. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I sometimes think this with, particularly with sweet peas, it's that time now where you see it on Instagram where everyone's sowing them again. And I sometimes think that I like a bit of autumn sowing, but I sometimes think the faff of having to overwinter plants is just almost not worth it. I understand the benefits of doing it, but I also massively understand the benefits of just buying plugs. There's nothing wrong with it.
I love a
plug. Taboo, isn't it? A plug for that.
Plug fan. In that book, in Sweet Peas for Summer, there's a lot of buy these plugs, put them in.
Yeah.
You know, I do that an awful lot. And I really enjoy plug buying, as, you know, looking through the catalogues and trying something new. Yeah. And when you buy plugs, I mean, yes, it's more expensive than sowing seeds, but it means that you can try something, and if it doesn't work, you don't have that awful, heartbreaking thing of having nurtured it all the way from seed.
Some of the best plants that we've ever had in our garden. I mean, we've got out the front garden, it's a very small front garden, but we've got a lot of Bidens, which I'd not grown before, never grown from seed. I bought them as plugs, and weedy little plugs, but they are the biggest, most brightly coloured orange things that I've ever seen. And I'll absolutely do it again.
Cheerful.
Very Lovely. Much so. So then that brings us up to the 5 minute garden. What was the idea behind that? I think some of it's in the name of the book, but what is that about?
The clue is in the name, and I really, you know, I've got three children and life can get quite busy. I know you've got two children, haven't you?
I have, definitely can get busy.
I think it's more to do, and I said earlier, I can go through a period of just real inertia. And I think that sometimes, and especially with gardening, and it's the same with housework, it's the same with all these things, it's very, very hard to get stuff done because your brain makes you think that you have to do a huge amount.
Yeah.
you know, whereas I used to sort of get the kids looked after and set aside a whole day or a weekend to do the garden, so to speak. Mm. And it just wasn't, you know, it's like painting the Forth Road Bridge. You know, it just doesn't work like that. It's much better if you treat it like brushing your teeth or making your bed. Yeah. Or, you know, turning on the dishwasher or whatever it is that you have, that's something that you do every day, you know, a load of laundry, whatever it is. I think that just getting out there for an allotted amount of time, for me, it was 5 minutes. And I think if you're having, you know, having doubts about yourself or you're feeling, you know, inactive, just being outside for 5 minutes, doesn't matter what you're doing. And again, not just the 5 minute thing, but just, you know, starting on the first thing you look at, you know, take the first thing you look at. And then it's very rarely 5 minutes, is it? I mean, you go out there and you put on a podcast. We were talking about long podcasts earlier, true crime podcasts. My goodness, I'm an absolute fan.
3 hours long, yeah.
Yeah, and then 3 hours later, you find you're still there, and you've done so much. So I think that, you know, it's more of the 5 minute garden is it's a series of prompts. It's like a little springboard to say, this is what you could do in 5 minutes today, this month. You know, how about trying this? And I think that it's meant to just inspire people to open the door and go out.
Yeah, I think it's a psychological thing as well sometimes. I think when you are, I mean, especially at this kind of time of year, autumn, winter, when it almost seems as though there is a lot to do. It almost seems as though there's too much to do. But I think sometimes if you are able to break it down into 5 minute chunks, it suddenly becomes more achievable, doesn't it?
Entirely more achievable. Mm. I mean, it's an age old psychological trick, which I, you know, and I started it because I was playing it on myself. I was thinking, oh my goodness, there's too much to do. Okay, I'll just do 5 minutes a day. Okay, I'll put it on Instagram. And then it obviously became a book. And I think that, and it, you know, a lot of people have, you know, they do say that it works for them. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's not, I didn't think it up. Somebody else did. There's nothing new under the sun. But I do think that for me, that's what works for me, you know, and even large jobs that you can't do in 5 minutes, they can be broken down into little tiny chunks. And it's amazing how much you get done.
It is. I said this before we started recording, but I genuinely have bought this book six times, because the sixth is my own actual copy that I'm not giving away. I've given it away 5 times, I think. And I think it just does break things down into a really manageable, this is what I can do. And like you say, you do end up, it's never 5 minutes. You end up being out there for 3 hours or an hour or whatever it is, a whole afternoon.
Yeah.
But you start that session of gardening with, okay, this is what I'm going to do in my 5 minutes. And if that does turn into a longer session, then all the better for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, you know, the big struggle is getting out the door, you know, just as it's the same if you're trying to, I don't know, get fit. The big struggle is putting your trainers on. And actually, you know, going to the gym or whatever it is. And I think, you know, I think it's just a prompt. That's all it is. And I loved writing that book because it was such an easy, joyful book to write because it was everything I knew and just put into these little ideas, idea. And I'm so glad. I'm so happy that you've given it and you've enjoyed it. I really, that makes me very, very happy indeed. Thank you.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. So that's been 2 years since that came out now?
I think it has. It came out in the times of the COVID time.
Well, I was going to, that's what I was going to ask. So did you presumably wrote that before COVID kicked off then?
Yeah.
So did that came out, was it March it came out?
You know, I don't know what's happened to you, but the last two and a half years are a blur.
Yeah.
You know, I've changed so much and my whole worldview has changed.
Yeah.
And I think that's happened to quite a few people. So I can't really remember. I can look it up. I can have a look in my book and see when it was published.
I think it was definitely, it was 2020, I'm sure of that. But I feel like it was the start of that year. But I just wonder how, I love that there were books kind of either born out of lockdown or that kind of came out at a time where people really needed books, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I know because you work in that area, you know, books saved a lot of people, you know, and books about how to do things. And obviously the internet is important, but, you know, having a little tome, and especially when we were at home with children, being able to, you know, having to teach them or try to teach them things. I don't know about you, what you did.
Crying was the word there, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't really do any of that. I just gave them a book to read.
It was an experience.
I can't, I'm too traumatized. I can't talk about it. No, I did teach them how to clean the loo. That was good. And hoover the house and that sort of thing. And yes, we mowed the lawn. Yeah. You know, that was quite interesting over lockdown. They were in the garden with me a lot more than they would normally be. I'm not someone who enjoys gardening with her children. And it's my place. But I think I did teach them to sow some seeds. We planted some bulbs.
Yeah, that sort of thing. It was a nice time, actually, really, wasn't it? And we had the weather as well. I think sometimes we look back. I've said this before, but it'd be foolish to not look back on some of that time positively, or all of the negatives of it. I think we had that kind of time where we all had to reset. And for a tremendous amount of us, the garden was that place to go. And I think having that time all together, we'll never have that again, that extended period where we couldn't do anything. Anyway, so for anyone that would like to look at any of those books, they're all still available. And unless I buy all the copies, then you can.
Yeah, it seems to be, it's a small book, whereas the other two are larger books. So, you know, smaller books tend to obviously do better because they're at a lower price point. And I think it's £10, isn't it?
It's £9.99, yeah. It is a perfect kind of little, I know I kind of joked about giving it away, but it is a perfect little gift.
Book, yeah.
Because it's that kind of size where it's just a nice thing to be able to give people. So I highly recommend buying a copy for yourself and a copy to give away.
can you just do a bit more of that?
Yeah, I can record that as a little soundbite and send it to you.
Yeah.
Well, what is the next thing then? Because you kind of mentioned about something else. Have you got something? Obviously, you may not be able to tell us, but have you got something? Have you got an idea in the works?
I've got nothing. I've got nothing, Adam. I've got nothing.
Okay. Watch this space,
yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, I have now got three questions for you that you may have heard after listening to the Daisy episode already. But
these
are about your garden and kind of how you garden specifically, I suppose. So the first one is quite cruel, I think, really. But if you had to redesign your whole garden with only one type of plant, so you can have multiple varieties, that's totally fine, but only one type of plant, which would it be?
That's very cruel indeed, but it's got to be ferns.
Oh.
I think there's ferns, you can do everything with ferns. Mm. And of course there are tree ferns as well. Mm-hmm. So I would be very, very happy with a garden just full of ferns. I'm a pluviophile, so I like things to be a bit damp and a bit sort of, you know, lush. Mm. And that would make me feel happy to be around.
Ferns it is then. Along a similar vein, if you could only ever garden using one tool again and no other tools, which would it be?
This is really hard because I have a few very important tools. If you're talking about a traditional tool, as in, you know, a spade or whatever, I use a hori hori knife, which is sort of a long thin trowel with a serrated edge on one end, and it's absolutely brilliant. I love that thing and I use it for everything. But I also use my phone a lot.
Unconventional answer. I like
it. Very good tool to remind you for feeding Fridays and to remind you to start, you know, to mulch, and obviously for listening to podcasts. I mean, I don't think I'd be able to garden without listening to podcasts.
Like you said earlier, it's nice to garden alone, but to have that kind of listening to a podcast while you're gardening, I don't think there's no better afternoon, is there?
No.
I agree. and the final question then, which is the age old question, which I keep saying is the age old question, but it's my age old question. If you had to impart one piece of gardening wisdom on a new garden owner, what would it be?
I would say garden in your best clothes. Just go out and do it. Which basically means just go out now and go and do it now. You don't have to get ready. You don't have to change. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to put those dungarees on. Just stay in your pearls and go out and do it.
You can find out all about Letitia's garden by following her on Instagram at Letitia McClough, and the link is also in the show notes. Do also make sure to check out her book, The 5-Minute Garden, available in all good bookshops. Join me next week where I have yet another fantastic guest from the world of plants, flowers and blooms. You can follow me on Instagram at View from the Potting Bench to find out who that might be, or sign up for my free newsletter to find out before anyone else.